442, Felton versus Felton. Mr. Peterson on behalf of the appellant, Mr. McKenna on behalf of the respondent. For the record, this is the northern panel of the Supreme Court of Nevada, Justice Sata, Justice Gibbons, and myself, Justice Cherry. Whenever you're ready.
Wayne Peterson on behalf of Stephanie Felton, the appellant.
Welcome to both you and Mr. McKenna.
Thank you. The honors, in 1993, the legislature confirmed our state's no-fault position in divorces and the division of marital assets. And instead of the just and equitable standard, they changed the language to say that the assets will be divided equally unless there are some compelling reasons to do otherwise, and that those are set forth in writing. In Curley versus Curley, this court said that this court will uphold the district court rulings, but only if the decisions are supported by substantial evidence. Again, in Rivero of last year, a year from this month, this court announced its findings and said that the district courts have broad discretions, but substantial evidence must support the court's findings, and substantial evidence is evidence that a reasonable person may accept as adequate to sustain a judgment. Now, in this case, there's a couple issues. One is this was a cattle business that's mainly at issue. First, I believe that the cow count was in error from the district, from the lower court. The court below found that there was 100 cows, 50 heifers, and 120 calves. Now, that's true is what the testimony of the respondent on page 84, I believe, of the record of appeal. That's what he said. But he also said that he had held 40 to 50 cattle for the benefit of the children. And I think if the court will review that record, we'll find that that was never added by the lower court, even though it's property of Felton Livestock. Those children, even though it may be for the benefit, is still carrying the Felton brand. It's still property of Felton, and the Felton Cattle Company gets the benefit of those calves when they're born every year. That was not taken into consideration, and that would add, I believe, about $176,000 to that bottom line. Now, when the lower court evaluated the Felton Livestock Company, it took hard numbers. It took the number of cattle, albeit we believe it wrong, number of cattle, multiplied them by how much they're worth that on that day, took out the liabilities, and came up with this number of $208,000. It's a hard number. It took into account no other thing, which is an ongoing business. An ongoing business has value. Now, in the record of appeal, I think it's the last page of the.
Mr. Peterson, was there any expert testimony putting a value on the ongoing business of either the cattle business or the electric sun business?
There was none. In fact, I'll get to the electric sun business, but there was no expert testimony given on either one. I think that the parties agreed that the amount given to the value of each head of cows was correct. They didn't argue about it. But anyways, the bottom line is that the Felton Livestock had in the profit and loss statement on the last page of the book two of the record of appeal shows that it had a net gain of $51,640 or right around that number. And when I'm advising a client of a value of a business, I usually go multiply that number by 10 if they want to sell it. That would be, if we use that figure of 10 times of what each year it makes, it would come up to about a $510,000 value for ongoing business. Now, if we look at their balance sheet, and that's what I attached to my reply brief, you will find that it's remarkably close to what his numbers to his CPA, to his bank, to that he borrowed money on reflects. His reflects $536,000, I think $135. So they're fairly close. Now, if we value, when the court took to Electric Sun, it didn't give the Electric Sun value the same thing, the same treatment as it did the livestock company. The court took the hard numbers. Everybody agreed. The respondent's attorney agreed. Ms. Felton's attorney agreed that Electric Sun had no value. She didn't own the building. She owned this business. And she took the hard numbers. What was she had in inventory, took away the liabilities, and came up with a negative $6,000. But then, and this is where I think the error came in, she added in this blue sky number. She said, well, it has to. And I think the courts said on Record of Appeal, page 384, lines 19 through the end of that page, and 385 through line 7, she said that there is no evidence or testimony to evaluate the business. That was the court's words. And I would agree there was none, except for the agreement by both counsel that it had no value. So she said it has to have some value. And my common sense, I'm going to give it some value. So she gave it a value of $100,000, which is half the value of what she gave the Felton Livestock, which makes no sense whatsoever, because there's a negative balance on Electric Sun and a positive cash flow. We have 120 to 140, depending on who you want to believe, of calves being dropped each year. And we have nothing over here. She's upside down. So neither this blue sky that she gave over here, she should have, if she was going to give these two businesses some sort of a subjective value of a business, then why didn't she apply it to an ongoing business that's making profit, that shows profit each year? She should have given some blue sky to that too, but she didn't. She took the hard numbers. But if you take the hard numbers, there's no value in this company over here. That's, I think, where the error came into this. Because
where did the $100,000 come from? There must have been some testimony or something for the judge to come up with that number of the value. And then Mrs. Felton owned half the business, so the $50,000 was her share.
Well, Your Honor, I read that 416 pages of transcripts twice, and I could not find one bit of evidence other than what I've just told you, that both counsel said, today we have no value whatsoever in this business. The respondent's counsel, I believe, said that we agree that there's no argument that the business has no value. In the future, we don't agree. I think that was the language that she used. And that's Ms. Unsworth, not counsel here today. So there was no value. This was literally, I could not find any even remote valuation on this business to justify $100,000. Couldn't find it anywhere. So the answer, that's a long answer to a short question, but no, there was no value mentioned as to Electric Sun except zero throughout the transcripts.
Okay.
Now, that being said, my other argument goes right into what I've just laid out for you on the valuation of these businesses, and that's spousal support. The court is supposed to, for two primary reasons, give alimony, and that's to allow the recipient spouse to live as nearly as fairly possible in the station of life that she enjoyed before the divorce. That was enunciated in Spranger versus Spranger. And the other is it that they're treated fairly. Now, my problem with this case is that the respondent did nothing to change his life. He went on with his business. He's got his gas, his truck, his insurance, his expenses. Everything's paid for out of the business. He has a net income at the end of the year, but everything's paid for. He didn't change his station in life at all. He still goes out and does his cowboying, and it's hard work, and I know, and I'm not taking anything away from him. But on the other hand, she had to change. She's upside down. She's getting money from her family to support this business that she's upside down. She can't get out of even. She's got these tanning beds. She's got this business that she's running, and she had to sacrifice everything. She has not even remotely the same lifestyle that she was living in, and it goes right back to the valuations of these two companies.
Well, didn't the judge conclude that Mrs. Felton has a degree in accounting and has some professional background, and by only making $1,000 a month in the electric sun business, she was the equivalent of being willfully underemployed, and she had the ability to earn more money, and that's why she didn't get alimony.
That is true. However, it was 12 years in the marriage. She was asked to stay home and raise children, which she did. Two nice girls. She stayed at home, worked the business, went out riding, doctoring the cattle. They did brandings together. When the bank would come out, the bankers would even come out and help with the brandings and the gatherings of the cattle. That was all. In 12 years, she has little idea of the accounting principles to go back into and really be a viable person in the marketplace. She would have to go back to school. And I'm going to reserve a couple minutes.
We have 4 minutes left.
Thank you.
Mr. McKenna, on behalf of the respondent. Before you get into the cattle, I'd like to hear about what Justice Gibbons was talking about the no value in the $100,000 on the electric sun.
I don't know how you evaluate businesses, especially family run, when you know dad owns the building and you're in business with your sister, you're accepting less wages than is probably the acceptable amount because you're reinvesting in the business hoping for future profit. I do think it is easy to distinguish between the nature of her business, which is a retail customer-based business, which could certainly go on without her. In other words, you might be able to sell it someday if you've got 20, 30 regular customers that come in every week and the business changes hands, those customers may still continue to come in, and that's what we talk about with Blue Sky. You've got a physical location, you've got a name, and you've got a customer base that has value. And I'm assuming that's the way the judge kind of got.
But wasn't there any testimony or any opinions by the parties, if there were no experts saying our opinion, the value of these businesses is X, and here's the basis for our opinion, so they could be cross-examined and all by the other side?
As you're aware, neither one of us were trial counsel, and there certainly does not seem to have been anybody that specifically came in and evaluated that business from that point of view. I think the other side of that in regard to the Felton cattle business, I see that, and again, this is my vision. I'm not an expert on evaluating or appraising businesses, but the cattle business is the cattle. It's a commodity. It's not a service. It's not customer-based. You either have cattle or you don't. And if you sell the cattle, it's the value of the cattle. It's not the value of the business that raises the cattle. So the only blue sky value for the cattle business is inherent in the commodity value of the cattle. It doesn't have a $50,000 or $100,000 goodwill value or customer base value or location value. So I don't agree with the argument that if you're going to blue sky one, you got to blue sky the other. I just don't think that fits in this case. I don't know how you count cattle, other than you count the hooves and divide by four. That's all I know. I don't know how you evaluate these two different businesses in terms of blue sky value or their value based on income. I don't know how you evaluate the fact that someone chooses to go into business rather than going out getting a job with their degrees and their ability to earn a certain income, but they prefer to earn less for the sake of reinvesting in the business, hoping for future profits. I don't know how you do any of those things. What I do know from this case is the judge spent 3 days answering each and every one of those questions thoroughly to the best of her ability with the evidence that was presented and looked at it in a very serious manner, very objectively, and did make findings based on the substantive evidence.
Aside from the parties who testified?
Excuse me?
Aside from the parties who testified?
We had an appraiser on the home, I believe. We had an expert regarding the cattle business, how you count the cattle, and what the value of the cattle are. There were accounting records, testimony. The judge was very interactive. The judge asked questions of the cattle expert, asked questions of the people who came in and testified. The judge cross-examined, if you will, both parties, and there were some inconsistencies, I think, that have been pointed out in terms of ownership, lack of ownership, you know, values and things like that. So as I understand it, this is not a retrial of this case.
Well, counsel, I want to interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Because in addition to the evaluation of the respective businesses, I am equally as concerned about the lack of spousal support or rehabilitative spousal support. Can you address that?
Yeah, and as I understand, and the judge, I thought, was very clear on this, that during the marriage, she received a bachelor's degree, she got an accounting degree, she got a real estate license selling degree, and when they were still married, the investment was made, the money was borrowed to open up this business for her benefit. So those were the kind of things she had coming out of the marriage which would put her on a good standing. She's chosen not to utilize some of those, which the court, I think, took into consideration and specifically said so. And then when you just say, well, I only make $1,000 a month, that's my wages, the judge looked at that and said, well, wait a minute, are you underpaying yourself because you're reinvesting in the business?
I get that, and I'm not going to second guess the determination of the trial judge. That's not what we're here to do. My question, however, goes to a long line of well-established cases, at least to the early 90s, that talks about how we make a determination of whether or not spousal support is due and owing, and that is that the parties should be able to maintain, I believe the language in the case is, nearly the same lifestyle as is possible after the dissolution of the marriage. Can we say that about this case?
Absolutely. If there is any difference in lifestyle, it's some of it by choice, because deciding to be an entrepreneur rather than putting yourself on the market and earning a paycheck. My client doesn't have his home anymore. He has the same business, but from what I understand, raising cattle and all the expenses entailed in that, and not having your own pasture land, and having to transport and having to deal with the expenses and the fluctuation in the market and the price of fuel and the price of hay, this is no glory business. You know, my client is not out there making zillions of dollars. So are they relatively kind of in the same place in terms of life struggle and life's opportunities? She may actually be in a little better position because she's in a retail business that has growth potential that maybe she can sell someday a few years from now when she decides not to work anymore. Whereas my client, his whole life is the number of cattle he has. And that's all based on what they're worth on any given day. He does not ever get blue sky. He never has anything to sell in the sense of a business identity. So I don't have a problem with the concept that the judge decided they were on fair and equal footing after the marriage. I don't have a lot more to say.
Let me see if Justice Sater or Justice Gibbons have any more questions.
Well, again, I was looking at that valuation of Electric Sun. The only thing I found, Mr. McKenna, was in the findings of fact conclusions of law filed March 10, 2008, on the proposed community property division balance sheet. It has the $50,000, I mean, her 50% ownership of Electric Sun listed. So I was looking for something else, how the judge came up with that, and there's nothing you can point me to in the record.
No, I don't think that number came from an outside source or came through testimony. I think it was the judge, based on everything she had heard and the fact that you were getting the reduced wages in order to reinvest, that it was a family business, that dad owned the real estate, that you're in business with your sister, and that it was a retail organization that could create customer base for future sale. And without expert testimony, I think the judge made a reasonable, objective conclusion about the value.
And we certainly realize the economics of getting experts in there, but, you know, most, I know the three of us were lawyers and district judges before, and I think almost always you have an expert come in, value in a business, and give an opinion and get cross-examined, and so it's kind of tough for us on an appeal to sort through this, so that's why I was trying to get as much information.
I understand, and I obviously I could agree with that had I been, you know, trial counsel, who knows, but I also look at that kind of realistically. If you don't mind, I'll take another moment. I'm getting close to that time when I'm thinking about retiring. I'm a solo practitioner. What is my law practice worth? You know, if I try to sell it, will all the clients that I have in the file cabinets leave because it's not me anymore? Does it have value?
We'll read Williams versus Waldman. Unfortunately, I was the attorney for Mr. Waldman in that case, and it's reversed. It does discuss that.
And I handled his next divorce as a lawyer and got money from his law practice, even though he'd been in practice for 30 years. I found an accountant who was able to give a new wife 10% of the law practice.
I had nothing to do with it.
Hey, rest in peace, Herb.
It's difficult to be realistic about that, and I know we can hire experts to say and do almost anything, and they do. But the value, the real value of what they say and do, I think the judge still would have to consider. So, again, I just think the judge, 3 days of trial, lots of evidence, lots of testimony, really worked hard to do the right thing in this case. And I don't think there's any abuse of discretion, and there's no inequality.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Peterson, your rebuttal. You may want to talk to Justice Ada about the alimony issue. Sounds like she's interested in that.
I'd like to first make a comment on the counsel's. As an attorney going through, been through a divorce, I can tell you that there is a value for as a law practice. as far as I think the argument that counsel is trying to allude to here is that somehow because she's got a family that's helping her, feeding her money, and her dad owns the building, that somehow the respondent should benefit from that. And I think that's just isn't law, and I think it's a ridiculous argument. It's not life. Mrs. Felton worked just as hard as Mr. Felton for 12 years, and I might add, I think if you look at the record, his testimony is when they got married, he had a herd of about 30 head. Well, I disagree with counsel in saying that this is just a static number of cattle here. This is a herd that they built up together over 12 years from 30 head to 200 head. If you believe the lower court, it's 150 head. But it's an ongoing. He culls the cattle, takes the ones that don't bring offspring, sells them, keeps the young ones coming up, the heifers, I believe, the first, second year cows, the females to start his own herd again. And he builds them up, and that's what he's done. And so I would disagree with counsel that says that it's a static business and that because she has maybe a client base that she somehow has a more valuable business. I completely disagree. In today's market, I can tell you that with her client base, those cows are doing much better than the people that are walking in wanting to give her money.
Mr. Peterson, I do want you to address my question, and that is, what is your position with respect to both standard alimony, the lack thereof, standard alimony award and the rehabilitative alimony award?
Well, in this case, we have, I think, both present. We have one where his standard of living and her standard of living are completely different. He hasn't changed anything. She has. That's the standard of living argument. The rehabilitative argument is that she had foregone her ability to go on as an accountant for 12 years. She's basically got to probably start over again. And he also brings up the real estate license. Well, she did have a license for a couple years. She didn't do much with it, and it lapsed in 1998, 11 years ago. So for her to go back, and especially today's market as a real estate agent, I think is far-fetched as well. So I think we have to go back and look at her business and where her station in life is. And I think that seeing the two parties and what they have, which is a business that still has a negative balance on the books, and we still have a positive cash flow over here and perhaps a growing herd. I don't have the balance sheet for the last 2 years. But you people are obviously in different stations in life after this divorce. And I think that Ms. Felton has felt the brunt of this. Mr. Felton has got all of his expenses, everything remains the same, and Mrs. Felton has had to scrap and borrow and still is scrapping and borrowing family members and eking out a meager living in a suntan lotion place in Fernley. And I'll tell you that isn't a great place to be, and it's in today's market, there's very little blue sky in that market. There's a lot of clouds. So I would just state that she is so in debt that she can't hardly walk away from the business. That's why rehabilitative may not be the answer. I think that she does get to have the station in life that she once enjoyed, that she now doesn't have, but she watches her ex-husband make no changes.
So your position is standard alimony, but not so much rehabilitative?
Yes. Thank you.
We want to thank both counsel for raising some very interesting issues before us and for your spirited argument. Ms. Cummings, this case will stand submitted. Thank you very much. And this court will be in recess until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.